This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
I think the one thing I resent most over the course of this show is that I've been forced to take the management side of the argument with Jamal Adams' salary. Like, I've been forced to take hey, don't come here telling me about the nuances of your play. Like, you're a safety. I'm generally a forget the bosses kind of guy, but I'm a management toady today.
You're going to lose your credentials, Danny.
I might. I'm going to have a hard time getting elected for the captain of my guild. I'll tell you that. It is Danny and Gallant. Mike Salk filling in for Paul Gallant today. And we're going to bring back our old flame and have a tug of war over him. Brock Huer joins us for Blue 42.
This is Danny and Gallant. This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42!
Brock, how are you?
Good morning, hotties. Good morning.
Two morning hotties.
Yeah, Brittany, Paul's usually the one that says that, Salk. And then I usually say, oh, Paul, doing great. Sun's shining. It's bright. It's wonderful. Lovely day. But now I feel like I'm sandwiched in between two lovers. It's awesome.
Dude, what is wrong with you?
It's early.
Hotties and lovers? It's 8 in the morning. Tone it down, man. This is a family show.
It sounds kind of dirty when Brock says lovers.
Everything sounds dirty when Brock says it.
Can you say it again? Can you say
considering
again?
He's the cleanest cut person any of us know, everything he says sounds filthy.
Yes. Salk was really disturbed when I said the love button on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Really disturbed.
I'm not allowed to say that on radio.
Gee.
All right, Brock. Okay. Dwayne Brown wants a new contract. Everybody wants to get paid. Jamal Adams we knew about. Now we got Dwayne Brown. This is, in my mind, could be a more difficult negotiation than Jamal Adams. Yep. What do you do with the Seahawks and Dwayne Brown wants to get paid?
Try to keep that man happy. That's what I try to do with Dwayne. And I hope they've had a few conversations this offseason. Those are details that I've not heard yet. We've heard about the Jamal deal, and they have been talking for a little while, but serious talks didn't really begin until about a week ago or so. I hope there was a call to Dwayne's agent when the season ended, and you know they got that big little flow chart going on in their in their meeting rooms, and it's like, okay, Dwayne's going into the final year of his deal. He's been phenomenal. He's been one of our best trades. He's been one of the best left tackles in the league. Even at his age, he's been available. I think he's been very fortunate, and I bet he would echo this, that man, the changes to the offseason, the changes to in season, the lack of hitting and all of that is prolonging my career, and we've seen that with left tackles in this league. I think he's got another 2 years after this one, so I have no issue finding a way to extend that man. The cap is going to grow, and on a list of most irreplaceable Seahawks going into 2021, you're not going to get beyond three or four for me without Dwayne Brown being on that list.
Do you not think Riso Diambo can take his place?
No.
Is he still here? He's not.
No,
here,
not.
Right?
Here's
no. Brock here's loves the Jamarco Jones, though. A couple years ago, he got to training camp, said the person he was most excited to see was Jamarco Jones, and now you're abandoning your guy, Brock. That's your replacement for Dwayne Brown. You'd be fine without him.
You don't even know the difference between Riso Diambo and Cedric Obuehi.
Neither does anybody else. It's fine. None of them are Dwayne Brown, and that's all I need to know.
Here's the thing about that, though. I agree with everything Brock just said, and I get what you're saying, Mike. You shouldn't extend him, though. If this is a normal situation, you say to him, we love you, Dwayne, and we hope this works out, but we're going to have to talk at the end of the season. You're turning 36. You're going to be 36 when the season starts, and you're making $10 million. But because of the uncertainty with your quarterback's future and because of how much is riding on 2021, I don't think you have a choice. This franchise has given extensions to Marshawn Lynch, Michael Bennett, as well as Cam Chancellor. And none of those three guys played a single down on the years that they added. We've seen what happens with these sort of contracts, but I don't think Seattle has any choice but other than to pay him.
We got in a good debate about leverage, and I probably will once again when it comes to Jamal. Sounds like you guys have been talking about that situation. When it comes to leverage, though, Danny, how much can Dwayne Brown levy? All right, that's fine. You don't want to? Then I'll see you week one. But don't count on me doing anything in training camp. And oh, by the way, week one, dang man, my knee's still aching a little bit. Sorry about that.
A little hammy.
Is he gonna practice?
Nope. No.
If you're a veteran, nope. Would you practice at all? And nope. If you're the Seahawks, do you say like, okay, we'll go with this less than ideal situation? By the way, this year that might determine whether or not we're still employing the same quarterback next year. Yes. You have to cut the check. I'm not happy about it, though.
Yep. All right, question number two, Brock. So, Tyler Lockett, have you heard this Tyler Lockett sound? It's worth listening to. So, he is talking about new offensive scheme and everything that Shane Waldron has brought to it. Essentially, the Buckingham Brown and Nichols scheme that they're bringing
right,
now here
right,
to
right,
the Seahawks.
Right, right.
And one of the things that Lockett likes so much about it is that it's not just the deep passing game. Take a listen.
You know, a lot of teams haven't really seen us go short. A lot of teams were trying to force us to go short, and we did, and we wanted explosives and stuff like that. But, I mean, truth be told, the explosive part of it is not going to change. It's just the fact that we're going to learn how to be a lot more balanced to where whatever teams decide to give us, that's what we're going to take. Teams decide to play us deep, then we're going to take everything short, and we're going to be able to run our offense all the way down the field and control the clock. If teams try to take the short stuff away, we're going to go deep.
Did they really not have a short and intermediate passing game before
now? No, of course they did. Of course they did. Of course they had every bit of the three-step quick game. Of course they had every quick little play-action pass and bubble screen and screen. That's all been in the offense. Now, was it featured number one? Was it top priority? I think that's probably where some of the nuance in this conversation is. Because that's where Shane Waldron has been around different quarterbacks, many of them not with Russell Wilson's skill set, not with his arm down the field. And, you know, you get the most out of those guys. And that may be a little bit more quick game than it is with Russ.
Is Russ going to be good at that?
I don't know. I think that's how much does Russ love that?
Yeah.
I think that is a fair question, right? Now, he ran the West Coast system. Right in at NC State for a couple years. Dana Bible was his coach. Dana Bible's continued to train Russell for a decade after that, plus loves him. Right. And there's a lot of little flat routes and spot routes and spacing routes and slant routes and all of those things. There are also a lot of picks at NC State for a number of different reasons,
yeah,
personnel and otherwise. Gets to Wisconsin. What is Wisconsin? Wisconsin's heavy run, heavy play action pass. Still some short game, obviously, but that's where you do your damage. What has he done here in this league? Where has he been the most efficient, second most efficient passer in the history of this league, man? Run game, taking shots, movement, throws on the run, extending plays, all the things that he loves to do that he's so skilled and adept at doing. Throwing hitch routes, throwing slant routes, maybe. But I don't think it's going to be a feature of this offense. I'm sorry, I don't see that changing wholesale.
That question of is it a feature, is it something Russ will do? Is Russ the football equivalent of the guy who's uppercutting and trying to hit for power and pull everything, and he's like, hit to the other field? Why bother? You want me bunting for a base hit? No. Singles aren't what gets you paid. Like, I'm going downtown.
I thought this is what Russ wanted, though. Isn't this what Russ wanted, was a more complete? I mean, isn't this the whole Russ cook thing?
Yeah, I think he wants gimmies. I think he wants easy completions, whether those are curl routes or
hitch
routes.
And I want $1 million.
Right. Whether those are...
I want it to be everyone else's fault.
Right. What are you talking about?
Whether those are 5-yard out routes or 10-yard in routes. I want gimmies. I want completions. I want guys open. I want to drop back and have what seems like other guys have that we've talked about in the past. Why are there multiple guys open? And why is it at times when he drops back against the Giants, there's nobody open? Doesn't feel that way. So I think instead of this long game, short game, quick passing game, complex game, I think it's about just easy completions. Take a little bit of the burden off of making everything difficult. Give me some ease and efficiency in this offense. That's what he wanted for. That's what he clamored for. That's what he believes that he got in Shane Waldron. I think many people on the early survey do as well. But talk to me week one.
All right, Brock. This is question three. You're appointed the magistrate. You're overseeing an appeal between the prosecution, which is represented by Mike Salk, who is making the case that Jamal Adams' salary cannot be boxed into the salary scale of safeties. That Jamal Adams, hey, that's an arbitrary designation that you've come up with. I've never described myself as a safety. I'm a playmaker. I'm an elite defensive playmaker. Hey, I'm in the conversation with the top defensive ends. Am I accurately summarizing your argument?
100%, but yes. Yes.
The defense's case is, yeah, that's all well and good, but we don't assign you to beat guards or tackles. Like, we design blitzes to have you as a free runner. You're not asked to take on a guard in the run scheme. All of you're a safety. We're going to make you the highest paid safety, but at the end of the day, you're a safety.
Mm-hmm.
Who's right, Judge Heward?
Well, what league are you in?
The NFL, not for long.
And how is the NFL structured these things from within the salary cap and every team? And how do they go about this process? The same way they slot players in a draft. Well, I don't care that I'm the 33rd pick. I'm worthy of the number 2 pick money. When I got drafted, well, hey, I know I was a 3rd-round pick of the Seahawks, 77, but they didn't have a 2nd-round pick. And I'm a quarterback, right? And I should get a little bit more. No, you're the 77th pick. That's the way this league is set up. Sorry. That you're in the NFL, brother. That's the way it works. And, oh, by the way, if you want to try to disband the structure of the NFL, go talk to Cam Chancellor and see how his 65-day holdout went.
This is I'd like to appeal the appeal, Danny. This is garbage. The judge you chose when he was a player, I think, actually quit the Players Association in order to be part of management. This is found a person sympathetic to players' concerns and the union concerns. Brock, this is collusion. The league colludes every day on this with the whole idea that
collusion?
I'm not a safety.
Is the slotting collusion?
No.
No?
No, I mean, that's a draft. I understand how that works. Oh, but just where did I sign up to be a safety? Who determined I'm a safety?
You did, Jamal.
No, I didn't.
From the day you played
high
school.
No, I didn't. I'm just a
player. And then all the way through college. And
you said I was a safety.
You love being a top 5 pick because of your versatility.
Exactly. So why won't you pay me for it?
It's a safety out of LSU. That's what
you're not a safety.
Oh, I'm sorry. What do you want to play, D-line?
No.
Do you want to wear Carlos Dunlap's old number?
Brock.
He's got 8. What do you want to wear?
I want to wear number 72. If Jamal Adams really meant all this, that's what he'd do. Yes. He'd come back next year wearing 95.
44.
Like, let's go.
What was Dunlap's number before he went to
43? At least that's a safety
43.
Number.
43.
Just put on 95 and all right, let's go.
Yep. I'll play off the edge. I'll play inside 3 technique, baby. I'm a baller. In fact, they got these rip-away jerseys. Okay, when we make all the cutdowns. Yes, when we make the cutdowns from 80 to 53 or whatever, here's what we're going to do. We got rip-away jerseys. So when I play D-line, I put on 90 whatever 90 number's available. When I play linebacker, I put on my 50 number. And when I play safety, I'll put 33 on.
But he's none of those. Like, honestly, jokes aside, if I'm Jamal Adams, and I know I'm sort of taking on everybody here and backing myself into a corner, but if I'm Jamal Adams, no, I'm not saying I'm a defensive end. I'm just saying that these names are titles. These things are made up. I want to get paid based on my value to the team.
I am the essence of today's football. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
I am,
and he is
positionless.
See, I don't know if he is, man. I like, honestly, it would be one thing. You remember when he got used by Stephon Diggs? Like, just tore up on Stephon Diggs. Like, he is
or
a
Julian
great,
Edelman.
He's a great player.
Yes.
But he is not an elite coverage safety. He compensates for that with other things he does. You're always evaluated based on your peers. And his peers are not defensive ends and cornerbacks. His peers are other safeties.
You guys are so old school and incapable of modern thought.
Love it.
Yeah,
why don't you listen to the millennials like me?
You're so worked over by this Montessori liberal. Like, you have to appreciate everything for its own little nuance. And
I
understand.
Don't.
No, dude, they're all in the group. All the dudes who are 6'4", 230 pounds, make about the... Like, they're in a different category than the big carnivores that play on the defensive
line.
So
my weight determines how much money I get paid, not my value to the
team? Because you can't take on a block against a guard.
Don't give up 2 first-round picks for me.
Hey, that's Blue 42. Can we go back to something earlier? Because my mind's been thinking about this Russell deal. When you think of the catastrophic interceptions that Russell has thrown, and there are not many of them, right? I mean, we can remember them because there's been really so few of them. This touchdown interception stuff is just off the charts ridiculous. But when you think of his picks, what do you think of?
Stuff in the flat. Wide receiver screens being called for the second time against the same team. And all of a sudden, somebody just jumping it. Cornerback just jumping it.
Prince Amukamara jumping a hitch route. right? Who is Marshawn's cousin? Just jumping.
Marcus Peters.
Baltimore, just jumping that hitch route, jumping that hitch route, jumping that little bubble screen, jumping that quick game, jumping those short routes. You have a guy that trusts and takes care of that football in truly unprecedented ways in 10 years. Like that value of the ball, that's why he and Pete, you know, have you know, one of the many reasons, yeah. But right near the top of the list.
There was one pick he threw on a slant.
Yes.
That wasn't his fault. Like, yeah, he's like the
I didn't say it
guy.
Was. I just said that's, he threw a pick
like
on a slant.
He's like the eighth guy to blame. Like, look at the other ones. With the
most catastrophic interceptions in his career have all been in short game. I'll say that. The pick sixes, I think, have all been hitch routes. The slant route, right? The Rams playoff bubble screen. The most catastrophic interceptions have come on what?
Yeah, look, man, I mean, you're preaching the choir to me, certainly, on this. Like, I think Russell Wilson is, at his best, handing the ball off, using his legs, throwing deep down the field, being creative, getting the game close and late, and then being unbelievable in the final few minutes of a game. Yep. Making the two or three plays that no one else in the league can make to win the game. That's what makes Russell special. It's not, I don't believe, and we'll see. I mean, I guess we could absolutely be proven wrong if he dominates in this type of system, but unless there's a running game and everything else that goes with it to get teams out of cover two, which is what Pete said at the end of the year last year, like I don't see that as Russell's best strength.
There will be run game. I mean, the essence of this whole Shanahan deal is run game, is play action, is all of this, but you know, we've argued for 10 years, and the House of Wilsonism was built on he can do everything. He can do everything. Doesn't matter what system you put him in. Don't put him in a box. Don't tell me he can't do this. Don't tell me he can't throw slant routes and everything else. But the numbers after 10 years will also tell you, and when you watch, and when I watched Kyler Murray last year, a couple times in person when I saw him in college, like, you know, when you're, you know, in Kyler's case, when you're 5'9", like, short passing game for me, quick game for me at 6'5". I still needed to see. I need to see over that tackle, okay? You know, and there's times that it's blind. Am I going to trust? Am I going to throw it out there? That even at 6'5", it's blind. But at 5'10", and 5'8", I do think there are times in quick passing game that, man, I got to see it. I got to see that extra little beat. I got to see that extra little space. So I really don't expect a wholesale, full-scale, oh, my gosh, look at the quick passing game now. BB&N reinvented the quick passing game for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. I'm not buying that scenario right now.
Brock. We always enjoy talking to you. A little bit of a treat for you this morning to get to both of us, right?
Good times.
Maybe you should be thanking us.
Thank you for that reunion.
You're welcome.
Maura, thank you for making that happen. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Brock.
All right.
That is Blue 42. We'll hear from Brock again on Monday. Danny and Gallant, Mike Salk in for Paul Gallant. We're about 10 minutes away from talking to Jerry DePoto. I do keep going back to these two Seahawks who want contract extensions. I think the resolution is the same for both. You're just going to end up cutting the check. Dwayne Brown's is the one that's tougher for me. I think that Jamal Adams is just going to be a little bit uncomfortable. Dwayne Brown's is the tougher one. Dwayne Brown's is the harder one because you're risking more. The downside with Jamal Adams isn't, hey, he's going to get old and broken down. Like, you're not taking on more injury risk with that one. With Dwayne Brown, I think you've got to do it. I think you've got to do it, but... Dude, I'm not comfortable signing an extension to a guy who's turning 36 before this next season.
Totally understand where you're coming from, and at the risk of destroying the argument I've been making all day, he's a left tackle, though, and I just have a little bit more... I think it's lot easier to commit that
longevity's more at that position.
Yeah, just easier, like the job... Not that it doesn't require the same type of physicality. Obviously, it requires a lot of it, but you know, Andrew Whitworth, who Clayton brought up earlier,
yes.
I mean, he's a great example of a guy that... could just last forever. Dwayne Brown's been reasonably healthy, not perfect health, but obviously he's been reasonably healthy. He's in great shape. He plays a position where those guys can just last a lot longer, whereas, you know, if he was a defensive back, I'd have a lot more concerns about it.
This feels, you're right about that. It's not like the Marshawn Lynch contract in which you're betting on a running back who's approaching 30. Like, that's hard. There's nothing that shows you, hey, this is a good idea. There are examples of left tackles who have maintained and sustained their performance into their late 30s. The way it's similar to the Marshawn contract, though, is I remember seeing the reports of that extension. And you're like, I understand why they have to do it. I understand that there is a serious question in that locker room about why he didn't get the ball at the end of the Super Bowl. I understand the sway that he has, and if he was to just walk away now, it's going to be really hard for them. I understand why you're going to have to basically bribe him to stay, but man, that's that you're going against the actuarial tables. You're betting against the tide.
When Marshawn came back here a couple of years ago,
yeah,
was it, would that still have been like his extension? Would it have gone until then? What he was, what I mean is like.
Oh, I haven't even thought of
that. I'd
have
to go back and look. But I mean,
it's,
like,
it's possible that, because you're right, because the extension, he had 1 year left on his contract. You extended him. He played that, what would have been the final year on his deal. Then he retired.
Right.
So he basically kept the money that you gave him for playing the final year on his deal.
Was it like a 5 year extension? I mean, I know you never expect to get to the end, but I wonder if 2 years ago would have actually been within the window of that contract.
Well, that's depressing.
Yeah,
I
know.
I don't know if I want to know the answer to that.
Yeah, anytime, you know, it's funny to be sitting here, Danny, and saying that the Seahawks have to, when we both can quote all of the various deals they've made that have come back to bite them later, and yet they have to.
They have to. They absolutely do. You don't have any choice, and you just want to make it as painless as possible in this process. It is Danny and Gallant. Mike Salk is nice enough to be in with us today. The second half of this program is going to shift toward more interviews, which should be a treat for everybody, because Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager, he's going to join us next, and then we've got Pete Carroll at 9:30. Stay tuned.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Mike Salk's in for Paul Gallant today, and I'm excited to have Mike. We're going to be talking to Jerry DePoto here coming up in just a minute or two. This Mariners season, in some ways, there's, if you take a look at the big picture, there's a lot of really encouraging things. They've had a rash of injuries. They're hanging around and competitive at two games under 500 now. They've come back a couple of times when it looked like this season was on the brink of having the bottom fall out of it. Like, there's some toughness and some resilience. At the same time, when you watch a game, sometimes it's hard to get really pumped up. Justice Sheffield gets knocked around last night. Jake Fraley's been your best offensive player. J.P. Crawford's really good. J.P. Crawford's one of the bright, shining lights.
Dude.
How have you – what's your – big picture perspective on this Mariners
season?
It's
very mixed, right? Because you're competing in some ways that don't necessarily reflect on your future, right? Kelnick went 0-for-38, got sent down. Sheffield hasn't done much. Thankfully,
Kyle
Logan
Lewis
Gilbert.
Hurt.
Yeah, I mean, Gilbert started to pick it back up, and the last two starts have been really encouraging. So I'm interested to hear what Jerry has to say about that. But before that, it was a little worrisome what you saw out of the shoot with Logan Gilbert. So some of those long-term guys, you're like, geez, like, I'm not seeing that level of development. You know, guy like Torrens, who you were hoping maybe was going to take over your catcher spot, Evan White. Like, there were some of these, some pretty big disappointments. On the other hand, you mentioned J.P. Crawford. Bright spot's almost not even the right word for it. I'm in love with J.P. Crawford. I straight up love the guy. And watching him in person a couple of nights this week just cemented it for me. You may appreciate this because I watched him. He had a really good game on Monday night. And at some point, he popped up, right? He missed a good pitch. He popped it up. And he was super mad. We were sitting really close. Heard him cursing, then heard a bunch of banging in the hallway in the dugout right after. It's like, oh, okay, he's legit mad. Later that inning, no more than like a minute or two later, they started rallying and ended up scoring a couple runs in that inning after his out. And he's the guy leading the whole cheering and right there. And it's just like, I love his energy. I love the way he plays. I love his passion. And oh, by the way, he's starting to hit like the prospect that he was. He's the best story of the year right now for me.
And an example of what you can find. I don't know if it's going to turn out to be there. It might be wishful thinking, but somebody like Jake Bowers, who kind of has some similar traits in terms of being a former top 100 type prospect. J.P. Crawford was a really highly regarded prospect.
Huge prospect. Yes.
And he got up and he didn't hit. And they, for whatever reason, and it happens with teams, and they decided we're signing Bryce Harper. We're built to, we can't wait for a shortstop. They trade for Gene Segura, and the Mariners get Crawford, and they showed some patience with him in developing. That's how you turn a franchise.
He was
around.
Supposed to be an all bat guy. He's turned into a better glove than a bat. Like, the glove was supposed to be the weakness.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah,
because it was, and he's a Gold Glove fielder. He is as smooth. I love him in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. He's good enough fielder that if he's an average hitter, he's in your lineup. He's a good enough fielder. And now it's looking like, by the way, that he might be better than that average hitter.
So what do you end up doing? Because this is the big offseason for shortstops, right? You've got Trevor Story, Javier Baez, Corey Seager, who's probably not coming here, but we'll throw his name out there, Carlos Correa, Marcus Semien. I mean, like, you are loaded with big-time shortstops. Do you not go after one of them because you've got J.P. Crawford?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Really?
I think that you look at an extension.
Third baseman.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the question. What about Jose Ramirez?
Yeah, I mean,
I love Jose Ramirez from Cleveland.
Yeah?
I love Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, you could get Trevor Story and put him at third base. I mean, like, there's a lot of options, I think, out there. So, yeah, it'll this offseason is going to be great. I'm psyched for it.
Jerry's going to be very excited how we're talking about how we're going to spend all his money. I think that he might have a little something to say about that. But we get our weekly visit with Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager. Jerry, first of all, as always, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you got it, guys. Glad to join.
And you guys getting back home, we were talking about J.P. Crawford. And if you could go back to when you acquired him, this has to be about the best case scenario of what you envisioned could happen with him developing with the Mariners after picking him up from the Phillies.
I'd say that. It's what he's done really dating back to the start of last year is, you know, he's evolved into one of the real two-way shortstops in the game. And, you know, while the offense might not always be as gaudy as the big stars, you know, the Bogarts and the Correas and the Tatis, you know, it's rare to find an elite defender who is an above average offensive player. And JP is evolving into that. You know, he's roughly carried a .340-ish on base, which is above league average for the last 2 years, which is now about 500 plate appearances. And, you know, his weighted runs created is above 100, and he leads all defenders at the position in defensive runs saved over that time, which is, you know, pretty significant when you can combine those two things. And when we acquired JP, if we would have thought for a moment we were getting a gold glove defender who was an above average offensive player for the next however many years, it's an exciting thing. And really, he's just opening the door to his prime. And that's even more exciting.
He sure seems like a pretty good leader, too. I mean, just watching him and the way he carries himself, the energy, the hustle. Did you know that that was part of the package?
We didn't. And that, to be fair, that's something that continues to evolve. And, you know, JP, as so many players through the course of the game, you know, he comes into the league, he's learning as he goes, he's confident in his skills. But, you know, they walk into the water slowly, and now you're starting to see his personality come out. And all the things you said, Mike, he is energetic. He's a really good person, and he anchors our clubhouse in a lot of ways because of all the players we have. JP never lets it get going too fast and doesn't, you know, he operates slow, but he picks up his pace at game time. He controls what's happening on the field and generally carries that over through the clubhouse and the way he behaves in his relationships with the guys. He's a great guy in the clubhouse. And that is, those are, I guess, critical elements to being a leader on a club.
Jerry, one of the big conversations in baseball this week has been over the use of substances and pitchers, what they might use to either enhance their grip or just provide a little bit of control. I know that that's not a topic that you have much say on when it comes to what the league's discussions and their memos and instructions are on it. You're also a pitcher with a background. How do you see the issue of pitchers using something to help them get a better grip or a better feel for the baseball?
Well, you know, I agree with the notion that there's always been something going on, and that dates back, you know, 100 years with various substances that have been applied, whether it was legal or illegal, you know. But for most of that time, we were talking about pretty benign stuff, you know, rosin and sweat, which are both legal things. And, you know, if it got more aggressive than that, it's you're pressing the rules of, or the, you're breaking the rules. And, you know, it was always something that had that scarlet letter attached to it, even with the most famous offenders through the years. And we've seen some egregious stuff, you know, thumbtacks and sandpaper and Vaseline, But what we're dealing with now is significantly different than that. And, you know, that's why I think the league had to step up and do something about it. And we're supportive of that, frankly. It has to, playing field has to be leveled. You know, we're watching the game change over these last couple of years. And it's fairly evident that this has been a strong contributor to that. And as such, we have to make an adjustment as a league. And I think the players in general are, there's going to be some division on it, obviously. And, you know, the timing isn't perfect, but I've never experienced any change in the way things would be policed or governed that could be viewed as perfect. Someone is always going to have their feathers ruffled. But this is the right thing to do for the good of the game and for the competitive balance in the game. And it was necessary for everybody.
Yeah, it would be nice not seeing like quite so many strikeouts. Like a few more balls in play wouldn't kill us as fans, I promise. Like I wouldn't mind seeing a few more hits. A guy who's had a bunch of them and a bunch of walks is Jake Fraley. And in thinking about him, how do you balance potential with production? Right, he maybe isn't the guy of your outfielder group that has the highest ceiling in terms of scouting, et cetera, rankings, but the production's been incredible. So how do you balance those two things with guys like him?
Just let him keep playing. and you may find out, you know, like this is one of the unique opportunities you have as a rebuilding club with a lot of young talent, is that, and I've said this through the last couple of years as we've gone down this road, you're going to learn a lot about players, and not every player is going to hit on the ceiling that you thought he had. And there are going to be a couple that show you they have more ceiling than they were given credit for. And I guess the one thing I would say with Jake is, you know, in 2019, when he played, you know, his, what to date has been the only full healthy season of his time with the Mariners, he destroyed Double A and was, threw up something in the neighborhood of a 900 OPS in AAA before struggling in his brief showing in the big leagues. So the skill set that he's showing now is actually a skill set that he has. And, you know, we're seeing it, you know, play itself out on the major league stage, which is, I can't say any of us were expecting it when the season started, but this is roughly what Jake did in 2019, albeit with an elevated walk rate. And, you know, how sustainable walking 30% of the time is, I'm not sure. I hope it's a sustainable thing. But he doesn't have to do that to be a good player. He's, you know, Jake has power. He has the ability to affect the game in different ways. And he does have patience in the box. We're just seeing it in a really significant way right now. And I hope that's something that the other guys are watching, because it's really made our lineup so much longer and given Jake an opportunity to play and show all the other things he does so well.
We're talking to Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager here. And last question for me, Jerry. Trade markets haven't really opened. I know that once they do, we're going to start hearing people talk about Mitch Haniger. I also know how much you guys like him. I thought it was worth kind of just asking from the big picture, where you see Mitch fitting into the team long term for a rebuilding club with someone who's older. How does he fit into your vision for the Mariners' future?
I guess I really don't view Mitch as older. It's, perhaps that's because we've not watched. He's older by comparison to some of his teammates, but we're the second youngest team in the league. And you know, Mitch at 31 years old is right in the throes of his prime. And for those who spend any time around him, and I know you guys have spent some, there are a few players that I've encountered that are more prepared, take care of their body better, or are built to sustain any better than Mitch is. So there's certainly a path that leads to Mitch being a part of what we do long-term. But, you know, as we enter the trade deadline period, like we have every year that I've done this, we'll stay open to what the possibilities are and make the best judgment we can make at a given time. But we see no reason to move Mitch. He's not only a part of what we do, he has been and was, frankly. He was missed greatly when he was gone. He's our best player and has proven that again in 2021. So, you know, we're not in a rush to move him down the road. We are seeing what Mitch brings to the table, and, you know, the consistency. When he's gone for a couple of days, you really feel the loss. So, you know, I don't really look forward to a future without him. Let's figure out, you know, what we're doing when we get to that point on the road.
Yeah, it was great to see him back in the lineup. That looked like an ugly foul ball that he hit off of his knee. You guys have another year of player control after this. Would an extension be something that's potentially on the horizon or something the franchise is weighing?
We're always, as you know, we're always open to thoughts like that with Mitch or other players. It's something we've used as in the past, whether it be with Marco, whether it be with guys like Evan White. It's something that we have been aggressive with, even with some players who are no longer here. You know, we did an extension with Gene Segura. We're open to doing things like that. And that has to be a marriage on both sides. So while I can say that that's something that we as a club consider for anybody, it's a matter of the fit, the length and the cost. It's always what it's about for both sides. And we'll be open to considering that. And I'm sure Mitch will too. But it's a matter of if it makes sense for us at the time and what the other possibilities are. And we'll always stay open-minded to that.
Hey, Jerry, just seeing Logan Gilbert's last start, which was by far his best so far. I mean, you know, I'll admit to some concern watching him the first few times out of the box, and the fastball sure looked like it was getting hit. What adjustments did he make, and how much closer is this to the player that you expected to see here long-term?
Well, what we saw last Sunday was the same Logan Gilbert we've watched since he was drafted. You know, and roughly the rest of his time in a Mariners uniform at any level has looked like it did on Sunday for the most part. And, you know, it's funny you say, Mike, that, you know, there is an expectation, especially with heralded young players when they get to the big leagues, that the day they step on the field, they're going to be the guy that everybody forecasts. And it takes a little bit of time, you know, CJP Crawford, and it's not that easy for everybody. And, you know, the fact that Logan was able to make the adjustments, you know, three starts into his major league career or thereabouts, I think is, well, it's reflective of how bright and prepared and talented he is. But it's also something that's not common, you know, with players as they transition to the big leagues. It takes a little bit of time, but they'll find their water. And, you know, we've thrown a number of guys in the deep end of the pool, and some of them swim a little quicker than others. Logan appears to be swimming quicker than some others. And that's a good thing for us. It gives us some stability. He has the ability to combine dynamic stuff. I think you saw on Sunday that in addition to a mid upper 90s fastball at times, you get what we think is an exceptional changeup and two breaking balls that can miss bats. His first couple of starts were it's a series of getting through confidence issues. You know, when you step into the league, you know you're good, but you have to go out there and feel like you're that same guy that you were in Double A or Triple A. And I think we're now seeing that with Logan, and he's taking control of it. And it's really fun to watch when you get in that cycle. And you have what Logan did on Sunday and what Yusei Kikuchi has roughly done all year long, and the stability that Chris Flexen brings. And we know the others are talented enough that when they step up, our rotation can become a strength. You know, it hasn't been to this point, and it's been more inconsistent, but those guys are starting to turn a corner, and that's a positive thing.
Yeah, there's really, really good signs there. Jerry, as always, we really appreciate your time. It's great to talk the Mariners with you. Team 1-2-3, and we'll see as they continue this homestand some really positive signs. Thanks so much, Jerry.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
That is Jerry DePoto. We got Pete Carroll, the Seahawks manager. He's coming up about 45 minutes from now. Mitch Haniger, someone who it sounds like his future. There are a lot of different paths there. We'll talk about those next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It wasn't the answer I expected about Mitch Haniger.
Mm-hmm.
It sure sounds like there's a lot of different options open. And I would have said, before talking to Jerry, that I would have thought maybe the extension was more likely than a trade when it comes to this year. And I think I might have that flip-flop now.
I would agree with you, Danny. I mean, I got it was pretty non-committal on the idea of an extension for Mitch, which opens up the idea to trading him. And, you know, I think that they very seriously thought about trading him a few years ago when they first started the whole, you know, rebuilding project. Probably could have gotten quite a bit for him from Atlanta at the time. The idea of him being back on the market now, I don't think is that surprising.
No, it's not. And the other part of this here is that it takes two to sign an extension. And Mitch might be very much of saying, hey, you know what? like I'm a year plus away. I've got one more season after this and I'm an unrestricted free agent and I'm going to market. Yeah. Like that's where I'm headed, which if that's the case, that might change the decisions you make as the Mariners. If you know that he's going to go out there and try and get as much, which he has every right to, does that change your calculus? And maybe Jake Fraley's emergence has an impact on that as well.
Well, yeah. And maybe Kyle Lewis getting hurt also has a negative impact. I mean, so, you know, you kind of have to balance all those things. Just not to change the subject, but I know we only have a moment. I was really encouraged by what he said about Logan Gilbert and hearing about the intelligence that he has and the ability to make those adjustments that quickly. Yeah, I'll admit it. I was a little concerned after the first few starts because we've seen guys who come in and just blow the league away right away. And I thought with his kind of funky delivery that we might see that and guys being totally fooled right off the bat. And when the opposite happened, it was like, oh, no. But what we've seen in the adjustments and Jerry talking about the intelligence as being part of the package with him, I think that's really encouraging that you maybe have a front of the rotation starter going forward.
He's getting better as games go along. He's getting better as the season goes along. Really, really positive signs for him. It is Danny and Gallant. Mike Sulk filling in for Paul Gallant. Pete Carroll's going to be at 9:30. We're going to talk about the challenges the Seahawks are facing when it comes to contracts next.